Omaha Steaks Black Friday deals landed early. We're talking 50% off site-wide and an extra 20% off select favorites, including incredible deals on USDA-certified tender Omaha Steaks. These are the deals you've been waiting for all year. And when you shop OmahaSteaks.com today, you'll get an additional $35 off with code BLACKFRIDAY at checkout. And don't miss exclusive limited-time savings on uniquely curated packages, delicious favorites, and so much more. But you'd better hurry, because these deals won't last, and every bite is backed by their 100% guarantee. Don't wait. Shop the early Black Friday sale now at OmahaSteaks.com to save 50% site-wide and an extra 20% off select favorites. Plus, get an extra $35 off with code BLACKFRIDAY at checkout. That's OmahaSteaks.com code BLACKFRIDAY. Terms apply. See site for details.
We're back with another fascinating guest here on Grassroots Marketing, CannabisRadio.com. My next guest is a dynamic leader with more than 15 years of experience working in the intersection of government policy and politics in New York City. You know, just that alone right there is brave and ambitious and amazing in itself. But also, she previously worked as well as a registered lobbyist, left the private sector, worked as Deputy Chief of Staff. Say that again, for Bill de Blasio, later Executive Director of Office of Intergovernmental Affairs at New York City's Department of Education. Just that right there. Hold on to all that right there. All that experience and all those positions in place. But now, what we see is she has now made her way into the cannabis space and putting products out. A woman-owned cannabis brand, a people of color cannabis brand, by the way, and she is part of a collective of five black women launching a cannabis brand in New York's market, the adult use market, prioritizing empowerment and excitement for consumers through trusted products, and also with a commitment to social equity, demonstrated through partnerships with nonprofits and neighborhood businesses, aiming to provide opportunities and support for those impacted by the war on drugs by establishing themselves as industry leaders. I'm here with the co-founder of Stash Queens and also Associate Director of District Council 37, Jamila Edwards. Thanks for being on with us.
Thanks for having me.
That's a resume and more right there that was all put together. That's a lot. Now, on the Blunt Business Program, which is a longer form program, and the Grassroots Marketing here, we've talked a lot about social equity. And it's amazing how much we've talked about it ad nauseum about New York City and New York State itself. With all the obstacles that are going on there, and there's obviously been a lot of press about the struggles and the obstacles for social equity licensees with CAURDs, cards, in the card program to go through inspection process if they're looking to go and take from the grant that's been made available, not realizing they got the 13-14% of interest back on that grant, which was more a loan than anything else. And for some of those organizations that are trying to go and build, what business, you know, resources they have, and are they able to go and make it to the finish line and put their store up without having to go ahead and sell it off potentially to an MSO that'll go ahead and just come on and take on? A bit predatory we've been talking about. But now a different side of it with you building a brand.
Yeah.
Like Stash Queens. Talking about, is it a similar path, or is it something where, or just, and are you specifically trying to help with those licensees that have those social equity dispensaries? Are you specifically targeting those stores?
Well, first, let me say those are the only stores open. So, you know, because the card licensees were given first access, that's who we're working with, and we'll be excited to work with them.
Of course.
I think that, you know, we have a little bit of a story to tell in thinking that we were going to be card applicants ourselves. Mm-hmm. And we thought that was the path for us when we first started Stash Queens, that we were going to be a dispensary here in Brooklyn and Buffalo and the Bronx, where the other partners are located. But, you know, we didn't meet the state's definition of justed impactedness, I'll say, meaning that, you know, our convictions took place out of state. Our siblings' convictions, which were in state, didn't count because they were our siblings. my father's conviction didn't count because it was also out of state. So we had this like quick moment of feeling down and like, damn, we missed out on this opportunity. And, you know, it's not fair that we aren't included. And like any strong business leader will tell you, you pivot and keep it moving. When we made the switch to just launch a brand instead, and we're doing that as a white labeling process, that we don't need a license at the time, or right now the state is offering brand 3 processing licenses, I think it's called. But we didn't need a license because we were working with one cultivator, which mm-hmm. is Hepworth Farms, a woman-owned, family-owned farm up in the Hudson Valley. And so we actually didn't need to obtain a license because we never touched the plant. So it was a unique opportunity for us to still be involved, kind of carve out our space and reach our market and target our consumers who, quite honestly, are folks like us. Women, women of color are also consumers and lovers of the plant. And you don't see a marketing strategy that looks at us. You don't see owners that look like us. And so I think we bring something new and exciting to the table. And we found our pivot.
Now, in your background, there's just so much here to be said about in terms of what you've done in city politics. Mm-hmm. I would think that Jamila, you, with your work in lobbying and understanding this governmental structure and what has to be done to get things done, you know, especially, you know, it wasn't that long ago that Mayor de Blasio was still there and Eric Adams. I don't know if there's been really much of a significant transformational change in leadership and what is being done in the city, but I can imagine what you're doing right now in this municipal labor union, the largest in New York City with District Council 37, your work and understanding as a lobbyist and what you're trying to go and do to obviously advocate in part for the cannabis industry. But I mean, tell me about what you've had in conversations. Obviously, you've talked to leaders like Yvette Clark and Adriano Espiedat with the Senate and Assembly, and you've also talked to the comptrollers. You had those conversations. And obviously, the program for social equity coming in as a brand or coming in to build a dispensary and cultivation, it's not working yet. It's not been very effective.
Well, yes. I want to give folks some credit at the sure. state. You know, like, they're building an industry that did not exist in New York State before. And I think that while it has been incredibly slow and there's been so many legal challenges that have kept the OCM from being able to actually implement the work that they set out to do, that they've done the best they can with the cards that they were dealt. Trying to stay within the law, trying to stay within as close proximity to the true intentions of the social equity program as written in the MRTA. And I think that has been a challenge for them. And I think while there is so much to be frustrated about, that we kind of don't look at them and be like, okay, you've got something off the ground and you did some of that fairly quickly. And we should be, you know, trying to help you along the way rather than bash you as, you know, as incompetent or incapable of kind of getting the industry off the ground. So I want to preface it with that. But I think that in my conversations with legislators, particularly folks on a local level here in New York City, we've talked a lot about the proliferation of the unlicensed, unregulated dispensaries that have popped up. There's over 2,000 in New York City alone. There's 5 within a 2-block radius of my home in Brooklyn.
Saying that they haven't tried to crack down, but there's just so much, and there's only so much they can do. But the other thing, too, is that I'm only saying that the ineffectiveness because the governor has said that and talked about getting an overhaul for the whole system in general. They needed to kind of basically do an audit through. So I'm only attesting to the fact that they admit it. And I'm not saying it's not been because good work been put out there.
It's been painfully slow. And the people have lost, people who have invested everything that they have, both on the cultivation level and on just in preparing to open a dispensary, have put a lot of money on the line that they maybe did or didn't have or took a predatory deal to get. So it's a scary place for entrepreneurs in this space.
Also, and they're, you bring up the point about, you know, the possibilities and just, hold on, I'm so sorry I cut in there. I had something right there and I just lost it. Oh, okay, I'm coming back right now. Here we go. Sorry to interrupt. But the other thing I want to make mention of as well is that you mentioned the illegal market about also the fact that the legacy operators are being left out. And even when you talk about the licensing process, about who could have potentially been licensee holders that they did not qualify. And that's like, okay, you're talking about people that could have been part of this as well, where you're not cutting into that illicit market by not allowing those that had already been plying the trade of selling cannabis and distributing it before this program was in place and give them a pathway to go ahead and come in, even though we've been hearing about, you know, even the education and the program to train has only done so much and has been a little bit, you know, kind of mired and difficult to kind of follow along as well. That's the whole thing. It's just that while social equity is important, and as you mentioned just at the beginning, those are the people that right now, social equity licensees, that have been getting the licenses first and be able to open up first. But
let's actually be very clear about the language that we're using too.
Sure.
Because I think when we say social equity, sometimes people associate that with like, okay, we're talking about people of color, we're talking about low income, we're talking about people who have had less access. The CARD program was very specific to justice impacted folks, which I think is kind of can be included in social equity. But I feel like oftentimes we're kind of just like throwing out the terms and kind of muddling the two. Not every CARD licensee is somebody who we might consider a social equity applicant.
I like to say it's usually either disenfranchised, oppressed. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I don't like to put the term either. But, you know, when you start seeing quite a few of the people that have been licensee holders, by the way, that have come out successfully, they have been people of color.
Yes.
No. So, I mean, I only know that from Roof Positive here. But I'll tell you this, too. A while back, I did an interview with Kat Packer, who's with the National Drug Policy Alliance. And, you know, before that, she was handling the Office of Cannabis Management in the city of Los Angeles. And no matter how much they can go ahead and crank out of being able to go ahead and qualify licensees and bringing them up into the process, it was never enough because there was so much more demand that was there. And it was a bit overwhelming, the kind of work there is. So I can understand that there's probably so much coming in. But I also feel like that the program, I'm only saying at my end, it looks like, you know, those license fees, and this is what also I've heard from some of these social licensees that come in, that some of them might come in, put $5,000, $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 in fees that they're never going to get back. And if they don't get the license, that goes away. They lose it. And that's just another pipeline of revenue for the government.
Yeah. I think that it's not a perfect system.
Right.
You know, I think there's a lot of work to be done. I also think that when I said that I don't want to bash OCM entirely.
No.
Only because I feel like, you know what? The agencies that we care about the most are the agencies that are funded the most. Your state budget is a statement on the priorities that you have for your state. If OCM were a bigger office than it is for a starting point, just looking at some of the bare basics, forget who is there, who's in leadership, what their priorities are. It is not a big enough office to even implement the kind of, you know, and start the industry that we're looking to create. They need to be about 3 to 4 times bigger. There needs to be an enforcement arm that is 3 to 4 times bigger. There needs to be a dedicated cultivation unit just for it. There's all these things, but how much can you do with an office of X amount of people looking to implement a new industry in a state? You know, so I feel like, damn, like could things have gone a hell of a lot better? Oh, hell yeah. Yeah, you know, like you know, everything is, you know, in retrospect, you probably look back and say, we could have done this better, we could have done that, but here we are. Here we are. And I think that we all need to keep pushing them as a lobbyist, I would say. You know, this is where the advocacy matters. This is where the Caneys of the world have really been pushing the needle here and making sure we're talking about potency tax. We're talking about the illegal market that has popped up with the different dispensaries, that we're not just bashing OCM, but we're helping them say, okay, well, these are things that can actually help the industry. Because sometimes people are quick to complain about something, but not offering a solution. And I feel like what the Cannabis Association of New York in particular has done in terms of moving the needle and having those tough conversations and being like, look, you can't go back and undo everything that you did, but here's what you can do prospectively that will make the industry fairer, stronger, more sustainable. That has been an important discussion that needed to be had. And I'm glad that there are folks leading that charge.
I don't want to make it where I'm being overly critical. I think
I'm trying to say as critical
as well, you know?
Yeah.
But my thing is, I know they could do better, but also looking on the outside, looking in, I'm saying to myself, we need this to happen because, you know, for the sake of eventually seeing...
Omaha Steaks Black Friday deals landed early. We're talking 50% off site-wide and an extra 20% off select favorites, including incredible deals on USDA-certified tender Omaha Steaks. These are the deals you've been waiting for all year. And when you shop OmahaSteaks.com today, you'll get an additional $35 off with code BLACKFRIDAY at checkout. And don't miss exclusive limited-time savings on uniquely curated packages, delicious favorites, and so much more. But you'd better hurry, because these deals won't last, and every bite is backed by their 100% guarantee. Don't wait. Shop the early Black Friday sale now at OmahaSteaks.com to save 50% site-wide and an extra 20% off select favorites. Plus, get an extra $35 off with code BLACKFRIDAY at checkout. That's OmahaSteaks.com, code BLACKFRIDAY. Terms apply. See site for details.
The cannabis legalization come to fruition for Washington, D.C. to pay attention and finally say, okay, we have all these bills we can pass. Let's finally put one up to vote. But we need to show that New York is one of the best examples. If the adult use program is rectified, as they're going to put themselves out there where it looks like how Colorado has kind of pushed more in a very positive direction, or California has been a very positive direction. We want to see that on the East Coast, that New York, you know, Philadelphia, or excuse me, Pennsylvania is paying attention to what New York's doing, New Jersey the same way. And then just imagine where Florida might be looking to it, or just like, will be eventually a future adult use market. I totally believe that amendment's going to pass. All that coming into place. But Jamila, I've also talked to folks that are license holders. I mean, there's an episode of a Cannabis Roundup program. We talked to the folks at Verde Cannabis. And let me tell you, when I hear that gentleman rant about the issues they had of trying to go and open up and what they had to go through to get there. And it, you know, it's like, oh man, there is so much or Days Cannabis. I think you talked to Keyshawn Warner. We just met him at Benzinga just this past week. And just knowing the hardships of going through to get there, I'm listening to their stories, so I can't help but put a spotlight on this.
Oh, 100%.
Only for the sake of let's get it better. Governor Hochul, Mayor Adams, get your OCM whatever resources needed because of the tax revenue you're going to come back in. And don't make it a tax revenue that you're going to take on from Chicago Atlantic, giving out the grants and what they're going to make off of that, or the fees that are being taken on the licenses, which is just other revenue. Get in on the taxes on the other end. And also let these legacy operators come into the place, give them a chance to come in. so the illicit market comes down. I think those are three possible solutions that can be done. It's going to take time, but I think those are solutions that could definitely be put to fruition.
I completely agree. And I think you said something important, which is it's going to take time. You know, unfortunately, all of my buddies who are in the legacy market, who some of whom are now license holders and some of whom are still operating legacy operators, unfortunately, a lot of those folks, you know, you're the first one, you're the guinea pig. Look, I mean, and so it was this exciting moment and people thought that they had this opportunity and that it was going to be quick, and it's going to be slow because they don't know what they're doing yet. They're not figuring out, they're kind of figuring it out as they go along. And there's so much that you can learn from other states and kind of how their rollout went. And, you know, could we have possibly done our homework better on that? I'm sure. But I think at the point that we also recognize when, you know, the firstborn is always the one that you test everything out with.
You know,
the firstborn is where you learn.
Right. But, you know, a little less than 18 months of the adult use program. And I still go back to, and I just think of the interviews I've done and folks. And I remember the focus when it came to social equity, that came to legacy operators, goes back when we had on our Hempire program, John Monopoly, with Urban Aroma. And then I talked to the Justice Foundation and all these licensees. And there's so many others that are in this place that it's like, it is a collective cry of like, let's go, let's effing go, let's get this all done. So for me, I could go on for hours about it. And I'm sure I have other guests that will come on a dog like that, but yeah. I don't want to hamper this much further. I want to get back to Stash Queens. I want to also get back to Black Star Wellness as well, because there's a lot that you have your hands on.
Yeah.
So first off, with Stash Queens, talking about the idea of, again, quality, integrity, true social equity, and you had your products pushed out roughly a year ago, and now you're in the space. So talk to me about, you know, the creation of Stash Queens and what prompted to go ahead and say, okay, we're going to pivot off the licensing. We're going to go for the brand. And how well has it done so far?
Well, we're actually going into production next week.
Okay.
So we won't be in stores until probably this summer, but we're super excited about that. For us, you know, there is a moment where we look around, you know, we are five Black women. We are all in New York State and Massachusetts State. And we have been consumers and lovers of the plant for quite a long time. My sister is one of the partners. Our mother was a legacy operator. Our brother was a legacy operator. Our parents are Rastas. The culture of cannabis has been something ingrained in our family for a very long time. And yet the culture of cannabis that you see in mainstream media doesn't really speak to us at all. You know, it's very male-centric. It is a, you know, we were at a trade show and kind of surrounded by all these folks, and all the marketing was like this super kind of cartoony hip-hop situation, which is really popular on the streets, you know, for those who live that life. And for me, I'm used to having my guy come to the house and bring me a half ounce of a couple different strains for me to sit and, you know, sniff through and sample and, you know, make my purchase and keep it moving. I roll really pretty joints. I stopped rolling joints and started doing pre-rolled cones, or, you know, stuffing my own cones, because you know what? I have really long fingernails and my fingernails are really expensive. And when I was at MJ Unpacked and MJ BizCon, and I'm looking for the different providers to work with on our packaging, one of the things that we wanted was a tin. You know how hard some of these child-proof containers are to open if you have fingernails? And I talked to so many of the producers there, and all of them men, and they were like, you know, we've never really thought of that. To the point that one company has reached out to us and kind of been like talking to us about like, well, what do you think about these? And would these be more palatable for someone because they just never even thought about it. And women are the fastest rising consumers of cannabis. And we make up a good majority of people who spend money on quality products.
Absolutely.
Women don't skimp on things. We don't go for the cheapest option. We go for quality. We go for brands that we trust and that we know. And there is nobody that is kind of speaking to that quite yet the way we would like to be spoken to.
No, but you know, and that's funny you say that because in the cannabis space, I know there's been quite a few products we featured here on the program of luxury products. And there's one I actually have coming up right now, one that they have a leather bag, specifically it's being made almost like a Birkin bag, $2,000 a bag, but it's like, okay, who's buying those? Those are women. And it's like, that's.
But are they? Are they?
I don't know, but I mean, hey, it's a pretty product out there, they're going to do it. But I've seen a lot of products when it comes to like how to store it.
I'm not spending $2,000 on some leather bag. I don't want to knock somebody's brand. It's a cute concept for those who can.
I'm not saying the name of the company, but it's like I'm hearing all these luxury products because there's also like, oh, well, what are you doing? Like, if you have your pre-rolls, where do you want to put them in? Something designer, something that's very flashy. Like, I've seen a lot of different products that have been done women own, and they go for luxury. And you'd be surprised how many luxury cannabis accessories are out there for sale, and people are putting out.
And, you know, luxury is one market. That is not our market.
Right.
That is not our market. What we want is quality cannabis. If I don't want to smoke it, I can't tell you to. And that's with working with cultivators that you trust and that you respect, who can get something quality in your hands, processing that can make sure you ain't boating your joint,
right?
You know, all of these things. Like, there are things to consider that produce a luxury product, but don't have a luxury price tag and don't have a luxury association. I don't want folks to feel like this is something they can't afford, or that this is, you know, good cannabis doesn't have to cost a lot of money. It doesn't have to come in a fancy box. I don't care what your box looks like if your bud is trash.
Right, right. Interesting.
So when we say quality and integrity, that's what we mean. You know, like, we're not looking to break the bank here. We're trying to get you girls what you want.
So now, you already said about it was Hempworth Farms in the Hudson Valley. And yep. So specifically, when do you think you'll be able to have access to be able to provide the Stash Queens this product you're going to have? What will be coming out as soon as you're able to go bring it out in the next month or so?
Oh, we're starting with two different products, actually. One is our version of a blunt. It's called the Palm Queen. It is a 1.5-gram cone that is in a palm leaf with a corn husk filter. So, you know, we can't obviously mix tobacco in, but we're all 90s girls. We grew up smoking backwoods in Philly. And we love a good blunt when it's passed our way.
Right.
You can't do that in the store. So this is our version of it. It's called the Palm Queen. That's number one. And number two is actually a live resin pen. And the vape cart is, you know, our version of it is called the side piece. You know, discreet, goes with you, easy to transport, ready when you need her. And so we're excited to have those two out there as our first two products. But, you know, it's important to us that things be done right, that they, you know, the quality is there, that the flavors are there. And that's where we're starting.
Fantastic. Also, I didn't even mention this in the program, but again, there's just so many hats you're wearing. You're also co-founder of Black Star Wellness, a minority-owned medical cannabis company where folks are able to go and apply for medical cannabis licenses in New York. And you have a lot of teams that help in the areas of cannabis, labor, public health, and medicine. Tell me about Black Star Wellness, because obviously what we've also heard about is, you know, for those that were social equity licensees that came into the space, they've also had to go and do some help for other burgeoning businesses looking to make their way in to have them kind of have access to the same business resources they had to succeed. Talk to me about what Black Star Wellness is providing.
So Blackstar has applied for a medical cannabis license. We are really excited about the possibility there. My business partner is Dr. Torian Easterling. We got together and started chatting about the lack of medical cannabis access in communities of color. And believe it or not, when you look at a map of where the medical dispensaries are in New York State, they're centered around upper middle class and wealthy white neighborhoods. And that is not a fair medical program. If I'm living out in Canarsie, if I'm living on the outskirts of Rochester, I'm living somewhere where in New York City, we'd call it a transportation desert because you need to have a car, you got to take a train and a plane and an automobile to get out of your apartment and into a central part of the borough. You don't have the same access and opportunity. And that's a misstep. That is a misstep. That is an injustice. Some of our folks in communities of color, especially our elders, has had a different relationship to cannabis than the younger folks, than the younger generation. And they haven't been able to have the same exposure to the positive benefits of cannabis, to the medicinal properties of the plant. When you go and you talk to the seniors and at first they're a little, you know, hesitant about what you're talking to them about, and they don't like the smell of it, and, you know, it's a gateway drug or whatever. But then you mention, hey, I know you have arthritis, and here's a THC salt that I want to try. I want you to try on your knees or on your wrist, wherever you're experiencing it. And the seniors are blown away. And it is not a drug that has to be taken. And that is something that they should have access to. And it's it's really unfortunate that we see now what I'll call a medical cannabis desert in areas across the state. So Dr. Easterling and I really wanted to kind of change the narrative there and start a company that will deliver, not in the physical sense, deliver, but deliver in terms of what our company will set forth to do, to provide access to the communities that don't have the access right now. I don't want to have a medical dispensary in Times Square. I want to have a medical dispensary in Coney Island, where they're in. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I get it. And also it's access to care, access to products, where I remember going into Creek City last March, I just said to myself, well, I mean, you see how many Dunkin's and Starbucks there are every other block in the city itself or in Manhattan itself. Just imagine if cannabis could have that kind of access to medical and adult use care. That would be something amazing.
Exactly.
All legal, by the way. No illicit market.
and I think that, you know what, also what that company looks like when we're talking about access in communities of color and access to care, that it also needs to have a leadership and a cultural competency that kind of understands and speaks to the community. And so I think that a lot of the bigger brands that and companies that are offering medical cannabis at the moment aren't going and talking to the seniors after church. That's a different model from what they are used to. That's not what they do. And what our approach will be completely different because it's more centered around empowering the community and taking both Torian and I's experience in providing healthcare access to the medically underserved communities that can change the narrative for what the medical program here in New York.
Although, again, I put that out because there's one thing about for those that are impacted, that obviously for those that want to be able to find businesses and find, you know, a great way of living, But we also need to make sure that the product is out there and available and accessible to all. That's obviously, you're very at the forefront in so many different ways with what you do right now. I want to just put on a couple of websites as we wrap things up. So District Council 37, dc37.net, dc37.net. Black Star Wellness is blackstarwellness.org, blackstarwellness.org. And then Stash Queens is stashqueens.com, S-T-A-S-H, queens.com. There's a lot that you're working on right now. And Jamila, really appreciate you taking time out to go and talk to us. Obviously, you know, once we hear about the products coming in, the Palm Queen, and what was the other product?
The side piece.
The side piece. I love it. Well, love to hear about that. No, it's wonderful. And I know we're going to talk again down the line. And I hope to go ahead and always leave the door open for you to go and come on back. Thank you again so much for being on with us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Brasco. Appreciate you.
Out there. Okay, and how many mistakes they make, that's just besides the point. I was a journalism major, and I don't like the way the industry's being run these days. But, you know, that's what you can get. That's what you can get. So,
yeah.
So
I really appreciate it.
Of course. No, my pleasure. I'm glad we got a chance to talk. But I was just like, there's so much going on that you're doing. I was like, wow, that's a lot of hats. A lot of hats to wear. Amazing.
Well, hopefully by the time we talk again next time, it'll be, you know, a few less, because, you know, it does feel a little scattered. A little hard to keep control of everything all at once.
Right. I'll do a little trimming on what I mentioned about the cannabis market in New York, because I know for me, I will get on the soapbox. It's not hard for me to do that because I've heard so much. I'm like, come on.
Yeah, because I didn't want to cuss, so minding my tongue, but I'm like, it's been a fucking disaster for sure. But I think that, like, ultimately, like, they have not been given a fair hand. You have like 30 people running that fucking office.
Well, and I'll tell you what, I'm trying to ask myself, you know, Governor Cuomo was the one that kind of instilled the program. No, but it was Governor Cuomo that instilled the program.
Anything without the board's approval, it's a mess.
Because I think Governor Hochul, she inherited this. And she's like, probably didn't want this or something like that, for all we know.
Probably.
And it's like, all right, well, you know what? There's so much fucking money. So much fucking money you're leaving on the table. And, you know, it's not, you might not have been the one that says that we're going to make social equity priority one, but you know what? Somebody needed to. And there's just so much money being left on the table. And I forget how much California's making. I think it was $6 billion, and they're not making even enough. But they're also doing other things where, like, I hate to say it, but social equity is being misused. There's a lot of corruption in it. Like, we're not even talking about the lottery system. But it's you said, the story you mentioned about bringing in, you know, what you're doing now, there's another group I remember talking to in Illinois. And I'm saying, well, for them, it was like, you know, people of color, the husband and wife. And you know what? They're great. Like, smart, everything, and just like they're accomplished business owners through and through. But, you know, if we can take advantage of the program, we'll take advantage of the program. If we qualify, yeah, we'll take that. If it gets us a license quicker, we'll do that. But
when we thought we were going for a license, we were sabotaged by different firms that wanted to help us, and they wanted to get us on board. And there was one major fucking cannabis law firm, major, that wanted to charge us $250,000 plus 5% equity in their business.
Wow. That's wild.
I have it in writing. I'd love to put them on blast.
Oh my God, yeah, man.
At that kind of shit, and it was like, you know, thankfully, I know what the fuck I'm doing. Oh, hell no. You know what? I got one of the other big cannabis law firms here in New York City, and they've been representing us pro bono.
Awesome.
Because they were like, you know, one of the partners was like, you know what? I'm taking this partners for pro bono because we need to put our money where our mouth is. We can't keep talking about social equity and not be about it. And you guys are wonderful. We know that, you know, we feel strongly that you're going somewhere and you're going to be bigger things. And one day you'll be able to pay our big rates. And I was like, God bless you.
That's
awesome.
And
so we have not paid any legal fees.
That's great.
But it shows you the difference between who's out there trying to like figure it out with us versus who is out there just trying to like see where they can get a buck and, you know, give you $250,000 and 5% of my business. You need to take that shit on Shark Tank, buddy, because you get a hell no. Where's Mr. Wonderful with his hell no? This ain't no skill. Like, are you kidding me?
Oh, man. So, that's wild. Wow. Yeah. It's so nice talking to you. We'll definitely do this again. Give me to the weekend to get it and publish it. We'll make sure to get your copy.
All right. This is awesome. Thank you.
And say a little curry for us, really.
I will.
Again.
I will. Take care. Have a great day.
You too. Take care. Bye-bye. Bye.